Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. As a first-gen Mexican-American, these conversations became my compass, offering insight, support, and an endless amount of inspiration. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking my dad the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear or straightforward, it rarely is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin. Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Radically Loved podcast. Tessa.
Oh, hi. Spoiler.
I'm like, Tessa's here as huge. And we're really excited today because we're going to talk to somebody I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. We happened to meet at an event of a dear friend of ours, Ruben Rojas, and he's such an incredible speaker, writer, just overall human. We're talking today to Humble the Poet. He's a Canadian-born rapper, spoken word artist, poet, internationally best-selling author, and former elementary school teacher. He has been all over social media and writing and talking about topics that are so deep. And for me, anytime I've read his work, I feel really seen. And I know Tessa also is a big fan, and I'm really excited to have him on the show today. Hey.
Hi, Humble.
You literally got here at the perfect moment because I'm like, oh, let's just record his intro, and literally you just appeared.
Oh, magically. Amazing.
Divine timing.
Okay. Humble. What are most of us doing wrong when it comes to love?
So I don't want to use the word wrong. I'll say what unhelpful beliefs do we have around love? I think that's probably a better way to look at it. Yeah, because we're already beating up ourselves all the time. What's unhelpful is outsourcing discovering love. You know, thinking for someone can provide us love, and because now they have to provide us love, we have to qualify for their love. We have to be worthy of their love. We have to be deserving of their love. And then we have this narrative of like, you're worthy, you're deserving. And I don't think those are accurate measurements. You know, that's like saying, you know, how much does yellow weigh? You know, this is not an accurate measurement. There's no deservingness of love. There's no worthiness of love. There's no, you don't have to be anything. You don't have to be enough for love. And I think even telling people they are enough is giving them an incorrect measurement. I think what we have to do is we have to realize love and access love. And I think every interaction we have with people can open, you know, it can open a pathway and create a pathway to love. And I think that pathway that we create comes through vulnerability and even a pathway within ourselves to discover love, is going to be paved in vulnerability. The more vulnerable we can be, the more authentic we can be. the more love will be realized. So I don't think, you know, and then also it's unhelpful to have these beliefs around kind of fast food versions of love, attention, admiration, validation, you know, feeling attractive. All of these things are great and they're fun, but they're not sustainable. And they might be delicious, but they're not nutritious.
Do you feel like with social media, it's creating a lot of this fast food sentiment? It's creating this sort of, you know, these versions of what relationships should look like and feel like. And I think that that's sort of where we're thinking, oh, it's so easily attainable as long as I do X, Y, and Z, right? Everybody's an expert. And instead of digging deep, like you're saying, the process of vulnerability and being your full self, it's not, you know, for some reason, I think it's just adding to our inadequacy or these feelings of inadequacy. Like, I'm not enough. I need to do what these people on social media are telling me to do so that I become attractive and that I could be more in my whatever it is. I don't even want to say the words that I hear on social media because I don't want to give them airtime, but I hear them all the time. And I really love what you're saying. Does that make sense? I don't know if I asked a question.
It does make sense. I think what it is social media scratches the itch. As I said, like if you're hungry, you can eat fast food and it'll fill you up and it's cheaper and it's easier to get than a nutritious meal, but it's delicious. It's not nutritious and you'll feel hungry very quickly after. It's not going to satiate you. But the truth is, you know, you go anywhere in public, people will always choose fast food over the nutritious stuff just because of the convenience. Life is hectic. Life is busy. So when someone provides you an easier option that gives you this immediate gratification, you're going to take it. And I think social media is scratching a lot of the issues that we have. We want to be seen. We want to feel like we matter. You know, we want to feel important. And social media puts a score on all of that. You know, and these aren't things that didn't exist before social media. It's just they weren't as intense. So I think the irony of it all is it really is about this concept of nutrition for me. It's really about this concept of like what actually feels good. And then I think we see it a lot in social media, you know, not just with love and relationships. You see it with like your health. You see it with like people in fitness. You see it with people in meditation and yoga. They tell you how to optimize and how to do things better, but everyone fails to ask the simple question, why are we doing this in the first place? And it's to feel better. Like, why am I going to the gym lifting weights? It's to feel better and not die when I help my friend move a couch, you know? And then these are the questions we should be asking. Did you die when you helped your friend move a couch? Because it doesn't matter if you change the angle of your tricep curl because you saw it on Instagram. And I think it's the same thing, you know, with meditation. It's the same thing with love. It's this idea of like, why are we doing it in the first place? It's supposed to have a feeling associated with it. And we're getting into the minutia of it. And the people who are creating this are not creating it to help us. They're creating this to entertain us, distract us, build a level of credibility so they can sell us some shit. You know, this is kind of the system that we're in. And the truth is, I think everybody wants to be seen and they want to be seen for who they really are. And generally, if we have a healthy family dynamic, that's probably the place that we've experienced that. We've experienced where it's like, oh, I know, you know, if I'm good with my parents or my siblings or the people I grew up with, I can name all their flaws and none of this makes me love them any less. And what I've realized too, and you know, I've since left LA, but you know, this concept of LA has this reputation of being quote unquote fake. And what I've realized in my work is people aren't fake. People are just acting in a way that they feel safe to act. They would be more real if they felt safe to be realer. But you know, we all act as prisoners and guards to this system of signaling to people, this is who you're allowed to be. And if you show us any more, we'll show you what happened to the last person who showed us too much. You know, so now everybody's very hesitant and everybody's encouraged to say a lot, but say nothing at the same time. And it's turned everyone kind of into this politician, which is to say as much as possible to make everybody happy and then read all the comments and then let them decide whether we're worth it or not. And I think that's kind of really translated into our self-worth when it comes to love. But the truth is, you know, you want someone to see who you are, scars and all, flaws and all, and you want them to simply be okay with that. I think about my puppy, you know, the biggest source of joy in my life. I don't need her to be perfect. I couldn't lecture her to be better if I wanted to. Everything about her is what makes me love her. And a friend of mine gave me some really good advice for dating. She said, just realize everybody, including you, is an 8 out of 10. Figure out what your -2 is and be able to communicate that clearly. Figure out what their -2 is and be able to accept it with grace. And I think this idea of like, it feels so good when you can be yourself around someone and it's accepted. And then just like, oh, okay, that's who you are. This isn't, they approach you with curiosity. It's not a judgment. Oh, you do this? Oh, that's not good for you. That's not bad. No, it's like, oh, that's who you are. You're telling me who you are. And I think that in itself is the definition of intimacy. Intimacy is exploring someone. And it's not, does it feel good? Does it not feel good? It's, this is what I feel like. This is who I am. And it's, and taking these measurements of judgment out of the equation. It's not about what's good and what's bad. People aren't projects. We don't need to fix them. We don't need to fix ourselves. We need to be who we are. And then when we're able to be as authentic as possible, we will feel better. This is why we have friends that give us energy when we're around them. We have friends that drain us when we're around them. The ones that drain us are the ones that require us to spend more energy that's not authentic to who we are. The ones that energize, it's like, I've been with this person for 3 hours and I feel like I have more energy than when we started, because you get to be yourself. You get to talk about the things that you love talking about. And I think that's been the really interesting idea, because social media is not optimized for that. Social media is like, hey, the rest of the world keeps score and they tell you who you are. And then even when you are vulnerable or what have you, even then you'll be subtly encouraged. How can I turn this into a commodity? How can I make this be, you know, almost, you know, insincere with your vulnerabilities? How can I cry on camera to get more attention? And I think it's something really interesting to understand, because just like TV, all of this stuff is here to entertain us. It's not here to educate us. It's not here to inform us. You know, Ross and Rachel was not here to teach us what a couple on Friends was. It was here to entertain us. But we, you know, Disney movies are here to entertain us. Porn is here to entertain us. It's not here to teach us things and impact our expectations of what life is. And I think it should be the same thing for social media. It really needs to be the same thing. And cool, yeah, you can learn how to cook a new omelet, or, you know, learn how to fix your bench press. But at the end of the day, doing what feels right to you is always going to be more important. Otherwise, you're just going to be constantly stressing yourself out, trying to live up to everybody else's expectations.
Hey there, tech savvy listeners, Rosie here, and I'm thrilled to share with you a game changer in the world of tech accessories. But first, let me drop a little something special your way. Picture this, a sleek, stylish solution to safeguard your devices. Now, let's talk about SafeSleeve, founded by two California engineering grads in 2012. They set out to tackle a pressing issue, EMF radiation exposure risks. And boy, did they deliver. SafeSleeve isn't just about function. It's about practicality and style all rolled into one. So what's the deal with EMF? Studies left, right, and center have all raised red flags, linking exposure to higher rates of cancers in rats and even leading France to ban iPhone 12 sales due to radiation emissions. But fear not, because SafeSleeve's got your back. For a limited time, for the listeners of this podcast, you can get 10% off by using code ROSIE10. You can get 10% off of your entire order. Head over to www.safesleevecases.com and use the promo code ROSIE10 to get 10% off of your entire order. Now, back to our show.
Humble, I have so many follow-up questions to what you just said.
I do too. I'm just like, you know what? Just you
there's
go.
So many things in there. Can we? I'm going to try to unpack some of the nuggets that I heard you say that I want to pull in a little bit longer. The first one being, I was going to ask you a question about, you know, what advice you would have for someone looking for to find a partner, somebody who's single, who's been single for a while, maybe, and or, you know, they have a hard time finding like a long-term relationship. And then I think the second part of that question is, because I heard you touch on this a little bit, is when you do get into a relationship And maybe it's been going on for a while, a couple of years, maybe it's more of a long-term, decades-long relationship. The kind of idea that we have around looking for someone who's going to allow us to be who we are, show up fully, accept us with our minus two. I love that, by the way. It feels to me like no matter, you know, what it is that I'm watching, consuming, or experiencing in real life, and maybe this is where I get kind of confused, is mixing up something I'm watching and consuming with real life. But it seems
to me like most of us do that though, right?
Right.
I mean, it's the truth.
It's a human thing, right?
Yeah.
But either way, I still feel like there is this honeymoon period, for lack of a better way to say it, where you do show up and accept your partner with their faults. And then I often think about my grandma's relationship with my grandpa, because to me, they were in love, but she was always harping. She just was like always upset with him. And I felt like kind of yelling at him over the things that I found kind of charming. And I imagined that when they first got together, maybe those were the things that she was drawn to. And then suddenly those things became the things that annoyed her up until, you know, they were married for over 50 years. So however long that took. So, you know, that's a long-winded question. And I guess I'll let you just take it where you want to take it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as a creative and as an artist, I'm a big believer in not worshiping the past. You know, I'm not a fan of idolizing our grandparents' marriages. You know, grandpa did not have access to the girls on Instagram. You know, this is the truth, you know, and they went out, they weren't constantly texting each other all day with the updates and then having to see each other in person. Like, it was a different world, and I do not view them
different
as
world.
Being better equipped. They were in a different environment. And as well as, you know, when you think about like the age old roles that men and women played, you know, it really wasn't an ideal situation, especially for the women. So I'm not here to romanticize them. I'm not here to say, you know, grandma and grandpa did it better than us. I think they lived in a different world, and we live in a much, much different world, you know, a hyper-connected world, a hyper-saturated world. You know, we're all dopamine addicts, and we're getting this digital fentanyl from everywhere. You know, if you know, the whole world can know who you are now, and the whole world can know your business. And the village mindset that people used to have about caring about what the village thought, the village is an unlimited thing now. So I think for me, how they did it was a different story. I do think there's some interesting things there. I think it's work. It's endless work. And I think one of the counterintuitive ideas that I came across when I was writing the book was compatibility should not be a prerequisite. Compatibility should be an outcome. So it's less about, do me and this person like the same movies and the same songs and have the same spiritual beliefs? And it's more about, well, where would we go take a journey together? Almost kind of like, you know, like kind of like the high school sweethearts. The reason it was such an impactful thing is because you guys were both developing together. You guys were both experiencing life together. You guys were having so many firsts together. How does that work when you're in your 30s? How often is an individual having a first time experience, let alone having first time experience with another person? I think that's a really important thing to understand. It's like, okay, well, if compatibility is the goal, now you two have to decide to walk a path, and that path might deviate from the individual path that you guys have had, at least in some aspect of your life. Like, hey, let me stop trying to make them watch my favorite movie and let me ask them to show me their favorite movie or what have you. And I think there's that. And also, as I said, the most important currency here is vulnerability. You know, the majority of time the couple spend together, you know, in this society of working 40 hours, being busy with all this other stuff, is they're just sitting down watching TV together. That's not strengthening a relationship. That's just spending time together. Vulnerability, if you think, and this is not a romantic formula. This is a formula for any relationship. You know, the more vulnerable you are with your friends, the tighter you guys are. And I think when it comes to these things about, you know, my grandmother nagging my grandpa about something, I do think there's a charm and a beauty to understanding that your partner is your partner, and they're able to see you from an angle that you don't see yourself. and they're on your team, you know? So, you know, maybe the little things could be like, hey, honey, you have lipstick on your teeth. We're about to go to this party. Can you deal with it? You're like, oh, that's my teammate checking out for me. But then it can turn everything into, I don't like the way you dress. I don't like all these things. And I think that's an important thing right there. And I also feel that it is day-to-day work. And one of the things and ideas that was brought to me was it's not about the outcome of the work. It's not about the success of the relationship. It's about who you become doing the work. That's more important. So it's less about, oh, I invested 5 years into this relationship and then we broke up. It was a failure. It's about who did I become? Who did I unlock in those 5 years of work, of showing somebody grace, accepting them for who they are, accepting their feedback to me, putting somebody else before me, trying to be more and more vulnerable, being willing to show myself to somebody at the fear of being judged. Who did I become through that process? And I think we have to remember that relationships are not here to heal us. You know, relationships are mirrors. If anything, relationships are here to show us where we need to do work. And I think sometimes we often resent the other person for that. And I feel like even in my own personal romantic life, you know, whenever I have a negative experience, it's like, oh, this person taught me something. They showed me where an insecurity was. They showed me where I was being hypervigilant. They showed me where I was extra sensitive. They showed me where a trigger was. And that's what they are. They're a teacher. You know, instead of saying, oh, they triggered me, I can't be around them anymore. It's like, well, why do I have that trigger? This is work that I need to do. And I think that's important. And I think also it's really important to understand that not only do we have unhelpful beliefs, you know, not only do we have unhelpful thoughts, not only do we have unhelpful kind of, you know, involuntary responses. You know, if you're triggered by something and have a trauma, that's an involuntary response, but it may not be helpful. We also have unhelpful environments. Does our modern world, is it optimized for us to be in loving monogamous relationships right now? Are they rooting for us to do so other than maybe giving us some tax breaks for getting married and having kids? Like, do they give us enough time? Do they give us enough space? Is that what this world is designed to do for us?
No, I mean, look, so I think, here, we're also like, just to, I don't want to cut you off because I love everything that you're saying, but we're also a product for companies that utilize our desire for our thirst for options, you know, our thirst for variety, right? We're no longer rewarded for making one choice. We can make many, right? So I think that there's a lot of that that comes into play with what you're saying. I totally agree. And I've just recently had the same conversation. Would our grandparents have chosen their partner if they did have an app, had they had more options? The answer is no. You know, it's like I look at my partner and I love him to bits. We've been together for 20 plus years and who you met at the event, I would have probably not have chosen him. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the truth. And I really think that the way that we're set up, you know, isn't really conducive to growth, right? We're not being supported in that growth experience. We're being pushed towards this place of what you're saying. Oh, this person triggered me, or I don't like the way this person blinks, so I'm going to keep swiping or keep talking to somebody else. We're not learning how to see these people as a reflection of who we are, you know, right? Looking at the 2 points or you know, like I'm an 8, what's the 2 points that I'm sort of, I don't want to even say lacking. I want to say the 2 points for growth that you have this opportunity to grow with the person. A lot of the times we're even being taught to not compromise with people because it's like, no. If he doesn't want to compromise, go to the next guy. He'll compromise for you. It's like, we need to learn with those difficult moments. It's like kids, you know, I live right by a high school. Humble, and you'll appreciate this because I'm driving, you know, to work. I'm, you know, going down my street. We're 2 blocks away from a high school and it's early in the morning. And so, you know, kids are kind of around and I'm looking around at these kids and I'm like, every single one of them is on their phone, headphones in, looking down. And there's tons of them. And I'm like, that was the time in the morning where you you push into that discomfort of talking to somebody or having a conversation, meeting a new friend, discussing what's happening at school, or just to pass the time. Those little feelings, or that fire of discomfort, is what helps us grow. I mean, these kids are just, I wanted to pull over and be like, talk to each other. Like, all of you are probably on medication for anxiety, I promise. Like, talk to your people, talk to the people you're around. It will help. You know, I'm not saying stop taking your meds. I'm just saying, I think it's really important for us to be able to engage. And I feel like this is speaking, Humble, to what you're saying about the relationship. In a way, it's the same exact thing. We need to be able to lean into that vulnerability, right?
Yeah, completely. And I think the other point I wanted to make is just like, take it easy on yourself, as I said, because the world's not on your team. If you're trying to find your person, the world is not optimized for you to do so. As I said, every app wants you it's a really interesting concept, because it's like, if you don't have any choices, that is oppressive. But then if you have too many choices, now you have analysis paralysis. So it's like, you know, maybe people need three choices or four choices, but when they get to 7, 8, now they're screwed. And I think that's been an interesting kind of concept here, where it's like, you know, for thousands of years, we lived in smaller communities. There really wasn't much choice, which probably wasn't good, but now we went to it's endless choice. And I think it's just give yourself some slack when you're like, well, nothing's wrong with you if this model isn't working in this modernized world. And I think it's something to pay attention to. And I think really to accomplish anything in 2024, anything, you have to be extremely focused and intentional. You know, if you're like, I want to start a business, like it's got to be, you think it's going to take 40 hours a week, it's going to take 80. If you want to find, you know, someone to have a child with, same thing. It's going to require a level of that. And again, it's a double-edged sword. Like, these kids are all on their phones, but you know, their antisocialness has also brought down teenage pregnancies because they're all so awkward and they don't talk to each other. You know, it's like it's a double-edged sword in so many different concepts. And it's just really about paying attention to the world and understanding it and just being like, okay, well, what has happened because of this? Because it's like, yeah, when we didn't have phones, we were getting into a whole bunch of other different types of trouble. And I think that's kind of the important thing for when someone's like, I need to find a partner. I think what it is again, going back to this idea of realizing that you are a source of love, your relationship with yourself, dating yourself, being vulnerable with yourself, treating yourself like a best friend, treating yourself like a lover, treating yourself like a nurturing parent, filling in those gaps that you might not have had. All of these things will create a light within you that will attract everybody. I'm not saying the right person. And when you're a great person, everybody wants to be around you, right? But I think that in itself creates something. And I think that'll create an authentic confidence, and that'll also create an ability to connect with other people. I heard a really beautiful definition of abundance recently. I think a lot of us are existing in this anxious scarcity mindset. And it's a mindset. It's not a measurable amount, whether it's money, whether it's love. And they said the way they measure abundance is how much can you share? So instead of saying, I live in abundance and reading affirmations in the mirror and saying, I'm abundant. It's like, no, start sharing. Prove you're abundant. Right? So stop, you know, it's like young guys, instead of just walking down the street trying to find some pretty girl to like use some shitty pickup artist skills on, go walk around and speak to everybody. Speak to everybody on the street. Make everybody feel good. Compliment a man's shoes, compliment the old lady at the street, talk to everybody. And then you'll see the quality of your life change, the quality of love you experience. And I think this is kind of the thing where we're kind of honing into these things and we're thinking about the destination. And the destination, ironically, is like, oh, I'm going to get married. That's the goal. Marriage is day one. You know, we make such a big deal about getting married. Marriage is day one of a journey. You know, you don't throw a big party starting high school. You throw a party when you graduate. And I think about this a lot. My parents are having their 50th anniversary. And it's like, them throwing a big party this year would make more sense than them throwing a big party on the day of their wedding. Because we have to accomplish something. And I think, again, this goes back to the idea that there are industries around us. There are people that are selling these ideas. This is what we need to have. We need to have gender reveal parties. We need to have engagement parties. And again, like, I'm South Asian. Our weddings are a week and a half long now. When I was a kid, there were 2 days. And it's just new and new excuses to spend money and a $5,000 let up dance floor at your reception. All of these things, they play a part where we live in a society where the religions buy shit, be happy. And then they start to sell you these ideas that she's worth 2 months' salary for a ring. You know, and it's like these ideas, they're worth exploring and they're worth questioning. Like, do I care about these things or was I told to care about these things? How can somebody show me that I matter to them? Is it based off what I was told and they got to do something nice for me on February 14th and they got to take me to Paris? Or does it come in the fact that they make me feel seen? That they make sure, you know, the bathroom is clean when I'm tired, or they cook me breakfast, or they do something that lets me know that I'm seen. And I think we've commodified it at such a level now where everybody's measuring it according to what everybody else is saying. And that's just exploiting our need to be social. So I think what we really have to do is have a better relationship with ourselves, spend some time with ourselves. And then when we have a stronger sense of who we are, come back into the world as that authentic person and make other people feel safe to be their authentic selves. And just another key on that whole, you know, 8 out of 10 - 2 thing, my therapist said it beautifully. She goes, what some people consider red flags, other people consider special considerations. And I think that is something that's been really interesting. When you come across somebody, you know, I was, you know, speaking to someone and she said, you know, guys don't like it that I have a lot of opinions and I talk too much. And I think for me, I love it when somebody has opinions, especially when they formulated themselves. And I love it when they talk. I want to hear people talk. I want to hear ideas. So it's like, for me, that's a special consideration. That's not a red flag, you know? And I think from that concept is you got to figure out who you are, communicate who you are. And there is somebody there that can hold that with grace. Be like, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal. And I've experienced that quite a few times with other people. And I think the best way for us to receive that is to have that ourselves.
I've been podcasting since 2015. And it's just like, I love when shit goes wrong. You know what I mean? It's just like, It's the best. I love it, you know, because it's just, it teaches you something. Like, yeah, shit happens. Even when you have been doing something for a long period of time, it's like you're utilizing technology. Like, it's just like life. Things sometimes don't go right. So to wrap up, I mean, I would love to just have a conversation with you all day long because I feel like we can agree on a lot. And also I'm sure I could learn a lot from you and your perspective. And I also like to play the devil's advocate and just see, like if I really, would this really work? You know, I love what you're saying about the special considerations because I'm like, I'm going to say that to Tori today. I'm going to be like, I don't have red flags. I just have special considerations, which is amazing. I think that's so cool. But that being said, you know, I've loved your work from day one. I've read all of your books and I really feel like I didn't even get a chance to talk to you about any of that really. But what's interesting is that this theme of love, it seems to be the ethos of what you do anyway, you know? So I think that creativity was something really big that inspired me from reading your work because I was like, wow, like he was a teacher and now he's a poet and now he's like an artist and this is so cool, you know, like he just followed his path. And so I think that it really aligns with what we've created here on this podcast and the sort of ethos that I followed in my life as well. So I do have one final question for you, but before I ask you that final question, where can people go to connect with you if they want to learn more?
You can find me. I exist on social media at Humble the Poet. Am I participating a lot? No, but I'm there. So there's enough there. And if you go on there, you'll just see clips of other interviews because I've been avoiding it myself for my own, you know, mental health. But it's easy. It's an easy place to find me. You know, and then if you read books, I got a couple of books out. You can search up Humble the Poet. And what we're talking about is the book How to Be Loved, which was a beautiful cover by, you know, Ruben. And that's kind of how we connected as well. But and humblethepoet.com.
Great. So we'll add those links in the show notes. And I will also add links to the books. So if you're interested, I highly recommend the links for all of those will be in the description or the show notes, depending on where you get your podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, it will be in the description below. So that being said, Humble, I asked the same question every podcast. And I just feel like asking a different question for whatever reason, maybe because I want to change it up and there's signs that it's time for a change. I feel like if you were to go back to your 15-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice on love, what would you say?
My 15-year-old self.
Your 15-year-old self. You know, that teenage self of ours that we carry with us everywhere we go.
I think I would just probably say everybody's just as scared as you. You know, and whatever you do to feel better, share that with them so they feel better.
I love that. Oh my God, that's such a great answer. I love that so much. It's so true, right? And especially at that age. I mean, even at this age, I feel like we're still scared. We're still so scared.
That's all it boils down to. I mean, you know, going out to you go to different social events or whatever, anyone who looks unapproachable or anybody who acts unapproachable, they're scared. It's a wall.
Yeah.
And it's a wall. They're protecting themselves because they're scared. And we just have to remember, we built walls to protect ourselves because we really got hurt. And then we got older, and then those walls turned into prisons. And now people can't connect with us. And it's like, just update the policies. We've learned more. There's other ways to protect ourselves. And a lot of it is leaning into the things that scare us versus continually putting up these walls, because that's just, as I said, the fortress turned into the prison. And we just have to break down the prison now. And that just requires us to be vulnerable. And I've seen it. And as I said, even here, I'm in New York now, and it's like, I'm gone to so many different worlds, different parties, different everything. And seriously, everybody looks so too cool to talk to you. And just the second you break the ice with anybody, everyone just warms up and just gets really soft and kind. And everyone was just waiting for someone to just make them feel safe. And that's all we're searching for. We just want to feel safe. And we may have different definitions of safety, but we also, as individuals, have to figure that out. What will make me feel safe here? And then just probably the last thing I want to add, my next book is coming out in a year about anxiety, and just going back to this concept of everybody being scared. There's this idea that everybody's a social butterfly and you're probably just in the wrong garden. And I think this, again, find your gardens and stop labeling yourself as socially anxious and look for a different garden.
Oh, I love that. I'm so excited. What a great little nugget for us to grab onto until it comes out next year. And you will come back to talk about that, I'm assuming.
Yes, it comes out.
Well, even with what you were saying too, like, people, you know, we do want to talk. I mean, even our interaction, I saw you inside of the party and I did not go up to you, you know, because I'm just like, oh no, like, he's busy or he's talking to his friend. Like, I'm not going to be that girl, you know, but we both happened to leave at the same time. And then I felt compelled. And even then I was talking to your friend. I wasn't even talking to you. And then he introduced us and I'm like, I know who you are, you know, duh. Like, I know who you are. So even in that moment, you know, there was that, like, for me, I felt more comfortable having a conversation outside of the noise, right? So when we're talking about finding the right garden, it's like, yeah, some of my people were at that party. I'm not a go out loud music party type of gal, you know, I'm more of like a, if I see you at the grocery store, I'm probably going to come up to you or like somewhere else, you know, like a book event or something. But I think that was, you know, it didn't stop me. That's the thing, you know, it didn't stop me. I could have just decided to not interact with you at all, you know, but I'm glad I did. And you were so nice. Like, that's the thing I've found in my experience as well. When I've approached those people, I've rarely, if ever, been shot down, you know, when you're just being open and kind and, you know, genuine. I think people reciprocate that. So thanks, Humble. Thank you so much for being here. We are big fans and we're so excited for all the work you've done and for the work that's coming soon. And we're so excited to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.